It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow with you. John Schmelk will be joining me a little bit later on, but so glad you can join us this morning as we are breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants, as the Giants are now looking ahead to their divisional matchup with the Dallas Cowboys coming up this weekend, which will cap a stretch of 3 consecutive home games. And so far, so good for Big Blue. 4 consecutive wins after an 0-6 start, and all of a sudden, the Giants are right back into the middle of this NFC East race. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513 on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, and you can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, as we're going to look ahead to the Cowboys game over the next hour. We're also going to take your phone calls. But before we get to the lines, just want to point out some interesting numbers, as Tuesday is a day that normally I like to add up some different trends that have taken place for this team over the last few weeks. And you look at these defensive numbers, and these are probably the numbers that jump off the page the most. What this Giants defense has been able to do in terms of completely pulling a 180. Now, the Giants' defense, you can make the point, was the Achilles heel of this team during that 6-game losing streak. And since the second half of that Bears game back on October 10th, which was that Thursday night game, it has been unbelievable in terms of how effective this group has been, whether it be against the run or against the pass. They have not surrendered a passing touchdown since that Bears game, the first half of that contest. They've only given up 2 touchdowns during this 4-game winning streak, one of which was the Terrell Pryor touchdown that had started when Oakland picked up at the 5-yard line because Jarrell Jernigan coughed up the football on that opening kickoff against the Raiders. So really, they've only given up 1 legitimate touchdown that I would throw into the mix, and that was against Green Bay, where the Packers actually had to go a good distance down the field. That Raiders game, that touchdown was set up because of a Giants mishap. But look at what quarterbacks have done over the last few games. Freeman, 20 of 53 for just 190 yards and an interception. Matt Barkley, 158 yards, an interception and a fumble. He was 17 of 26. Terrell Pryor, 11 of 26, 122 yards, an interception and a fumble. And then Scott Tolzien, who has thrown for the most yards than any of the other previous 3 quarterbacks, 339, and was efficient at 24 of 34, but he had 3 interceptions. So the Giants are getting back to what's worked last season, and that's where they were an opportunistic defense that was able to rely on some takeaways. And they have 9 takeaways during this 4-game winning streak. Aside from Rashad Jennings, they have absolutely shut down the run. Jamal Charles, 3.6 yards per carry. McCoy, 2.3 yards per carry. That was the first matchup. Forte, 3.5. Peterson, 2.2. McCoy, the second time, 3.2. And Eddie Lacy, 1.9. Jennings is the only running back to surpass 80 yards on the ground since week 4. And they have not surrendered triple digits on the ground from an individual perspective since that Carolina game. And by the way, look at how Carolina has turned things around. Big win on Monday Night Football against the New England Patriots. Carolina is now 7-3. They're just a game back of the Saints, and they've got 2 games coming up against New Orleans. So they are very much in the mix for that NFC South title. But some of the losses that the Giants suffered early in the season, and this is not to get a silver lining out of this, and this is not to make those six losses any easier to digest, but the Carolina game was a game that most people thought, okay, secondary's banged up for the Panthers. This is a nice matchup for the Giants. This is a Carolina team that still has a lot of issues. And you look a few weeks later, all of a sudden this team is starting to click, and the Panthers are 7-3. So perhaps that victory against the Giants was a taste of what was yet to come for the Carolina Panthers, and that's clearly how so far this season has turned out. And Dave Gettleman, former Giants executive, now running things in Carolina, they have done a nice job with limited cap space in getting right back into the thick of the NFC South race, and that defense has really done the heavy lifting, and that's been the biggest difference for the New York Giants. A lot of teams that you're seeing all of a sudden that got off to slow starts and now are regrouping, a lot of it has to do with getting healthier and also getting that defense back on track. And that's probably, to me, what you can point to with respect to the New York Giants. The fact that they've gotten some different personnel back in the mix, and they've also been able to stockpile a lot of those takeaways, something that was not apparent over the first six games. They've still got to work out some offensive issues. You know, the running game, they're sticking to the run. They've had at least 24 carries in each of the games during this winning streak, but in the three previous victories, they had at least 31. In terms of the breakdown against Green Bay, they had three runs for at least 10 yards. And that, to be honest with you, is their highest total of double-digit runs since the Week 6 contest against Chicago, when they had six runs for at least 10 yards. So that was a step in the right direction to some degree. But they had 25 runs for 3 yards or less. And if you look during the course of this four-game winning streak, they have had at least 17 runs for 3 yards or less in each of these four victories. So they're running the football, and that's important. You want balance on offense, but you still need to take into consideration it's not as if they're getting a great deal of yardage on each of these runs. I think Andre Brown being back in the mix has been a huge boost, and you would assume as he gets more and more games under his belt, he builds more confidence, he gets used to how this offensive line is playing, and perhaps we'll see the yardage per carry head in the right direction. But even though they're running the football, you can't really say, wow, this is an explosive running game. And until this running game gets explosive, I still think the passing game is going to be giving you what you're seeing, where they're going to have a flash here or there with a big play, but it's hard to sell the passing game when you don't really have a reliable running game, because they're not going to bring a great deal of guys into the box if the Giants are only getting 2-3 yards here and there. But if the Giants start getting 5 yards a carry here, 7 yards a carry there, 8 yards a carry there, that's all of a sudden where defenses need to say to themselves, we need to bring that safety closer to the box. And then you would assume guys like Victor Cruz, Ruben Randall, Keem Nicks perhaps will have a little bit more room to work with down the field. Now, this is a game against Dallas. There's a Cowboys secondary that has been plagued by injuries and plagued by issues. Two games in which the defense has surrendered over 600 yards. Numerous games where the opposition has put up at least 400 against this defense. And this defense is hurting. Sean Lee, he's banged up. Justin Durant, his backup. Neither of those two guys are expected to return. DeMarcus Ware is still dealing with some injuries. The safeties are battling injuries. Morris Claiborne, their top corner, other than Brandon Carr, has not been very healthy. So, yes, this is a game on paper that you would say to yourself, hey, the Giants should have opportunities down the field. Maybe this is the breakout game where they're able to air it out and they're able to get back to what worked in that Week 1 matchup. And I would agree with you 100% if you throw out that argument, but just keep this in mind. We've had this discussion time and time again each and every week against Oakland, a secondary that has been prone to giving up big plays. Didn't necessarily pan out. Giants won the game, but they couldn't really rely on the big plays. Against Carolina, all the way back at Week 3, secondary banged up. They were throwing out third, fourth string players, and Carolina made up for it with its front seven. So you can only really break down the Dallas depth chart so much. You can take the trends away, and you can say, listen, Dallas has had trouble stopping the opposition for the most part. So even if you can't get the big play, that doesn't mean that they can't rely on some of the short passing situations that they've thrived on the last couple of weeks. And maybe, you know, this is a game that you start to get this running game moving so that you can get some big chunks. And if you look at that Saints game, which happened right before the bye for the Dallas Cowboys, New Orleans, not only did Drew Brees pick apart that Dallas secondary, they stuck to the ground. Mark Ingram, Pierre Thomas, everybody who had carries, even Darren Sproles, feasted on this Dallas attack on the ground. So this could be a game that, although it looks very attractive through the air, this should be a game that maybe the Giants could take advantage of the running game and get it back to the level where most Giants fans have been used to seeing it, at least in the last few seasons. Hasn't been consistent, but this has been a team in terms of its identity. Although they've thrived on the big play, they have really liked to get this ground and pound game going. And that is something to me that they're going to need if they're going to separate themselves from the pack and really put together a lengthy winning streak off of this four-game rise. Because you have teams that you're going to face either in cold weather situations or they're going to come here to MetLife Stadium. And you're going to have to perhaps rely on the running game more so than having Eli Manning throw even in the ballpark of 35 times. Because it's going to get windier, it's going to get colder. And you know, based on previous seasons, the best attack under those circumstances is to rely on the running game, not necessarily have Eli Manning throw 45 to 50 times. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's head to the lines. We start with Andrew in Easton, Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing? I just wanted to talk about two things I saw in the Green Bay game that I hope I don't see in the Cowboys game. And first of all, Brandon Jacobs, I know he's a good leader. He's big mouthpiece for the team and everything. But when it's fourth and inches or on the goal line, I know he converted it all three times. But just by, like, the skin of his teeth, Andre Brown can be barreling through those holes. I understand they want to keep him healthy. But in those really desperate situations, I think the ball should definitely be in Andre Brown's hands, not Brandon Jacobs.
Well, I think that's the plan moving forward. And you're probably referring to the circumstance where Andre Brown got that two-yard run, and then they brought in Brandon Jacobs on the very next play. And he did punch it in, but he has a history of being hesitant at times and not necessarily hitting the hole. But at the end of the day, Andrew, they need multiple options when they get down near the goal line. It's nice to know that Andre Brown is going to be the guy, but in a pinch, you need Brandon Jacobs to be used to those circumstances and used to those situations. So I think for the most part, they'll rely on Andre Brown, but don't be surprised if, just to change it up and catch the defense off guard, Brandon Jacobs is going to be utilized in some of those short yardage situations. It's not just going to be the Andre Brown show. They can't afford to run him 30 times a game. He's going to wear down eventually.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. That makes sense. The other thing I wanted to talk about too was Hakeem Nicks. He had a couple decent catches this week. Like, he had that one where, like, Eli Manning threw it into, like, triple coverage and he went down immediately, but he still got like 20 or 30 yards out of it, and a couple other big plays. And as soon as he's getting up, he just looks like he has no fire in him. Like, not even like he got shut down or had a drop. He was making catches, and he was just getting up, looking down, not into it, just, like, beaten. And, like, I don't think he's ever going to see the end zone if he doesn't start playing with a little bit more heart and a little bit more fire. Did you notice that as well, like, his demeanor after even making the catches?
Well, there was a situation also on the sideline that has created some controversy, and Tom Coughlin was asked about that and said it's an internal matter and nobody should really read into that. Listen, when you look at Hakeem Nicks, Andrew, throughout the course of this season, and appreciate the phone call, thanks so much for weighing in, you can read between the lines and look at his facial expressions and say, hey, something's not right, something's missing. But it's not the health factor anymore because he's healthy. Is he maybe still ailing in certain situations? Perhaps, but you can't point to the knee after what he had to go through last season and what he went through during the offseason. It's not the health that's holding him back. You know, part of it, I think, is just maybe his internal frustration that as a result of these injuries, he's not back to the level where he was when he first entered the league or the first few seasons. So I think he's still trying to deal with that and overcoming that. He was pretty efficient, though. When you look at the numbers in this last contest against the Packers, and John and I were throwing out the targets versus the receptions for Reuben Randall, Victor Cruz, and Hakeem Nicks the other day, and I was even taken back because I would have never expected it to be 5 targets for Nicks, 4 catches, and then Randall really has been tremendous. And he, I think, has been a pleasant surprise where he picked up from where he left off against that Eagles game in the season finale last season, and then has been rather efficient throughout the course of this season. Last few games, 9 targets, and he has caught all 9 of those targets. So that has been a blessing in disguise for Eli Manning, especially when you know Hakeem Nicks hasn't been that guy that he has been in previous seasons, and Victor Cruz has been double-teamed. So you need a guy like Reuben Randall. You need a guy maybe like Brandon Myers, who eventually could break out of his shell. It's not anymore an offense that can just say, okay, Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks are going to go out there and they're going to win their man-on-man battles. They're going to be able to break through these double teams. It's gotten to the point where you need that third and fourth option, and sometimes you even need the running backs to dump off. But I think it is apparent that Hakeem Nicks is dealing with something. And I don't want to speculate, and I don't want to say that he re-aggravated an injury, because I don't believe that's happened, but I just think he's not yet back mentally and physically to a comfort level where he was a few years back during the course of his career. You know, a lot of players who have gone through knee injuries, ankle issues, and they've had surgeries or they've rehabbed, sometimes it's taken an entire season after just to get back the taste of what it was like to thrive or play at a Pro Bowl level. Now, look at Kenny Phillips, for example. I know he played a different position, but that at least is relevant to this conversation because Kenny Phillips was a former Giant. And when he had that microfracture knee surgery, it took him an entire season till he was able to regroup and all of a sudden feel more and more comfortable. And the same thing could be said to maybe a guy like Stevie Brown if he comes back to the Giants. Remember, Stevie Brown's a free agent. So any player, whether it be a defensive player or an offensive player, you go through the grind of a season after coming back from an injury. Sometimes it takes 16 games just to reclaim that high level of play. And I think that's the best criteria and the best thing to throw Hakeem Nicks into the mix. It may take another full season. Now, as to determine what's going to happen with his future, you know, right now it's still too early. If he comes back and he returns to the Giants, perhaps we'll see a flash and a return to Pro Bowl form for Hakeem Nicks next season. But I don't know if it's going to happen so quickly this year. However, with that being said, they still need him on the football field. So if anybody wants to make the argument, well, if Hakeem Nicks is not 100%, why is he out there over Lewis Murphy? Why is he out there over Jarrell Jernigan? Well, after seeing what happened with Lewis Murphy on that interception, I think that case is closed. I don't want to hear anybody throwing out, well, guys like Murphy, guys like Jernigan deserve to play over the three-headed monster of Nicks, Cruz, and Randall. Whether they're healthy or not, whether they're playing at a high level or not, those are your best options. Those are the best options for Eli Manning. Those are the best options for this Giants offense. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's head to Kendall in Canada. Kendall, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, Kendall. What you got?
Well, I'm traveling on Friday to Boston, so I can't do my bowl predictions on Friday like I normally do.
Well, no better opportunity to do it than today.
Well, and I'm going down to watch older brother spank Tom Brady on Sunday night. That's why we're going to Boston. So today's the bowl predictions. So the bowl prediction is Brandon Myers gets 150 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Well, that would be a very, very bold prediction if that comes to fruition. Listen, if the Giants could get that, they will take it. They've been waiting for Brandon Myers to give him a taste of what he put up in Oakland. And, you know, Dallas has struggled, not necessarily just against tight ends across the board, and they are missing a lot of key linebackers. If there's any game, at least on paper, Kendall, for that to happen, this could be the game.
Well, it was with when if you watch the Dallas and New Orleans game, once Sean Lee went out, Drew Brees just ripped them down the middle. So that's why my bold prediction is that Brandon Myers will get the 150 yards because I think the middle is going to be wide open in that game with Sean Lee out. They're a completely different team when Sean Lee plays and when he doesn't play.
Sean Lee was out last season, Kendall, and that really put the Dallas defense in a very tough spot. They had multiple injuries aside from Lee, but I agree with you. Lee, to me, is the heart and soul of this defense, and now that they're in a 4-3 scheme, they moved him to the middle where he's supposed to set the tone, stop the run, drop back into pass coverage, and you now no longer have Lee, and you don't even have his reliable backup in Justin Durant. So this is a game where if everything goes right, the middle of the field could be Eli Manning's playground.
Well, and we know as Giants fans what the difference between having a good Mike, having a Pro Bowl Mike linebacker or not. Just look at the difference. Before Beeson and since Beeson, when you've got someone of that Pro Bowl caliber playing in the middle of the field, being the quarterback of the defense, night and day. Brandon Myers going to get her done this weekend. Have a good week, and hopefully we'll be having a celebration on Monday morning.
All right, Kendall, always good hearing from you, and enjoy the Patriots-Broncos game this Sunday as the Patriots are going to be looking to bounce back. I'm sure they're very irritated over what transpired on Monday night when they fell to the Carolina Panthers, and then you have Denver looking to build off that big win against Kansas City. Broncos-Chiefs are going to meet again in 2 weeks. And I'm sure that game is going to have just as much hype, just as much buildup as the first meeting. Let's head back to the lines. We got Chris in Baltimore. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man? I would be in MetLife this weekend from Baltimore, born and bred in Baltimore, but I bleed blue. So I'm going to be there. I'm so happy, man. They picked up Beeson, and he's been awesome. He's been the answer to my prayers. We've needed a linebacker since Pierce was here, and he's just stepped up. And, I mean, they're a whole total new defense. I think Dallas is going to – I think we can beat Dallas as a winnable game. I know that they're going to come after Eli. We can blitz. If there's anything that I'd like to see, I know we kind of strayed away from it as a team, but I think that we could kill them in the screen game with Brown, and maybe even Cox can come out and catch a couple of passes out of the backfield because their linebackers, like you said, have been saying they're so hurt. And I also think that, you know, like Kendall said, Myers might have a big game this year, this week, because, you know, their linebacking core is so banged up. And I really hope we keep Nix next year. I know he's not having the greatest of seasons, and, you know, with that looming deal about his contract situation, I know it can make it hard to play. But, like you said, we got a three-headed monster at receiver. And if we ever get clicking, I mean, when we back when we had Manningham, him and Cruz, I mean, you know, we were just that type of team where you didn't know the way the ball was going. And Eli made plays, and he was comfortable. He just put it up. And we need to get back to that. And he's got to be a part of it. I don't see anybody in the near future that can replace him if we don't keep him. So hopefully it all works out. But I'm really happy with where the team is going. And, you know, people have been giving us a lot of bad rap because of the quarterbacks we've been playing. But, you know, those guys get paid, too. And, you know, the defense still has to play, and we still have to make the plays. So we got Romo. I feel like he's going to give us at least 2 turnovers. So it's a winnable game. Hopefully we can do it on Sunday.
All right, Chris, appreciate the phone call, and I agree with those sentiments in terms of the Giants turning things around, as I noted at the beginning of the show. It's not just even John Beeson. You know, don't overlook the fact that once they got Will Hill back from the suspension, then the way Terrell Thomas has been playing, I don't think anyone expected Terrell Thomas, not necessarily to be a contributor, but to play at this high level consistently week in and week out. He's up there in terms of the leading tacklers every week. He's been great in coverage, and they've needed him because look at all the injuries they've suffered in the secondary. Aaron Ross, he was a guy that they thought they were going to rely on each and every week. Couldn't even get through the course of 5 games this season because of the back injury. Corey Webster, everyone thought this was going to be a bounce-back campaign. Not the case. Plagued by injuries. So all of a sudden, you've got to go further into the depth chart, and you get closer to the name Terrell Thomas. And he has taken that role and just run with it. Whether it be the nickel corner, whether it be on the outside, whether it be the safety. His versatility has been a big key to this defensive turnaround. Those are the 3 players to me. Beeson, Hill, Terrell Thomas. And I think Justin Tuck has been very effective against the run this season. A lot of people were calling him out last year. You know, JPP had the interception the last game, but you know, you're still waiting for that game, that statement game, where JPP really gets to the quarterback, piles up the quarterback hits. Not necessarily the sacks, but really makes his presence felt. You're getting a flash. And listen, if he could chip in with an interception, you'll take it. I mean, that was a huge swing of momentum for the Giants. That game was very close. It was a 7-point game, and then JPP gets the interception, exclamation point, comfortable 2-score cushion. So that was a huge play. And then listen, if they're going to get it from the defense, they'll take it. This is not an offense, at least that we've seen the last few weeks, that can really light up the scoreboard. So if you get the game changer from the defense, you get the game changer from the special teams, You don't get bonus points if your offense is the only unit to put up the points. If your defense could do it, if your special teams could do it, it still counts as a win. Makes no difference. And I think the last few weeks, those two units have really been the difference makers. Special teams had a very shaky performance against Oakland. Bounce back was effective against Green Bay. And the defense, for the most part, has held its own. They gave up some big passing plays against the Packers. Outside of that, they've been very consistent against the run. And the other thing that Chris touched on, the Giants being criticized because they haven't really been tested during the course of this four-game winning streak. No, who cares? You just got to keep winning. Everybody wants to put every team in perspective and say, well, this team is really not as good as their record. And Kansas City, for example, has caught a lot of flack. Losing to Denver, people are like, oh, well, the Kansas City Chiefs are who we thought they were. They're a good defense, but their offense has a lot of issues. It's not a high-powered offense. You can't blame a team for having specific teams on its schedule. It's not like Kansas City and the Giants sat down and said, okay, weeks 4 through 6, these are the teams we want. You play who's on your schedule. Did you think Aaron Rodgers was going to get hurt? Did we think that the Vikings were going to have three different quarterbacks that they had turned to by the time they faced the Giants? Did anyone think that Michael Vick was going to be banged up? Okay, well, maybe you got me on that one. I think we assumed Michael Vick wasn't going to be able to last for 16 games this season. Or Terrell Pryor would have had a lingering knee injury. Yes, did the Giants catch some breaks? Absolutely. But even if you catch some breaks, you still need to make defensive stops. Your offense still needs to perform at a high level. Now, that Oakland game, regardless of whether Terrell Pryor wasn't healthy, and regardless of whether that secondary had given up some big passing plays, you know, Oakland was right with the Giants in that contest. So that was no cakewalk, regardless. Because Oakland was able to get to Eli Manning at times, and they were able to run the ball effectively. So even if you think the quarterback is not 100% and is not a top 10 caliber quarterback, that doesn't mean that the rest of what this team has to offer is nothing. Green Bay had an effective running game. The Giants had to slow that down. Same thing with Oakland. It's not just about the quarterback. They're going to get tested with Tony Romo this week. So if the Giants go out there and beat the Dallas Cowboys, the skeptics can't turn to the quarterback argument. And then after that, they're going to have RG3 and Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford. Yes, the quarterback's going to get that much better over the course of the next few weeks. But to sit here and break down and say, well, the Giants didn't deserve this win because they went up against a third stringer. No, who cares? You know, let the pundits, let the so-called experts have fun with that. They need to fill up airtime. They need to fill up some storylines for the national audience. All the Giants need to worry about is continuing to build off of the momentum that they have on this four-game winning streak and continue to win football games. And Tom Coughlin even touched on that because a reporter asked him, well, you're getting caught up in all of the speculation and all of the criticism that the Giants haven't beaten anybody over the last few weeks. And Tom Coughlin said, you know what? I couldn't care less. All I'm concerned about right now is preparing my team to beat the Dallas Cowboys. Let's head back to lines. We got a good buddy, Jeff, in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Morning, Lance. How you doing?
Doing well, Jeff. What you got?
Good. That's good. Well, you know, I'm, as all other Giants fans, I'm very pleased with the four-game winning streak. But in order for that to continue, the offense is going to have to step it up, and especially Eli. Eli's got to pick up his game. You know, I just looked this morning. His quarterback rating, did you know, is only a 70.4?
It has not been good, Jeff, and that pretty much sums it up. No, listen, I'm not going to stand here and defend him. Yeah.
And I realize, you know, a quarterback does not play by himself. I understand all that, but, it's to me, at times, he seems to be playing with, a little bit with some hesitancy or, I don't know how you could best describe it, but it seems that way to me. And, you know, and another thing, I don't know if, I know you already spoke about Knicks, and I don't know if you attend the Giants games, but I was just wondering what his demeanor might be on the sidelines. You know, could you say something about that? Do you have any idea?
Well, there was an incident, at least in this last game, that received a lot of attention, and I talked about that at the top of the show, where he got animated on the sideline with a few of the running backs, and Coughlin said, let's not read too much into that. Now, I think it's a valid point that Akiem Nicks, if you read into his facial expressions, you read into his body expressions, there's something missing. And part of it could be that maybe he's just not 100% or he's not back to the level of confidence that he had prior to the injuries that he dealt with last season. I think that's a valid argument. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for him. There's something missing, whether it's internal confidence or whether it's just other defenders are having a step on him and he just doesn't feel like he can beat them. There is something definitely missing from a physical or mental perspective for Akeem Nicks.
Yeah, I agree with it. I think, you know, the mental aspect of it is just as important as the physical aspect. And if you're not feeling really well mentally and you are 100% physically, you're still not going to be able to perform at, the way you should be. Another thing, since Coach Coughlin got here, we've been hearing time and time again all these years how we have to get better in the red zone. When we get to the red zone, we get to score touchdowns. Now, this occurred to me some time ago that, over these past 10 years or so, that many players have come and gone. We've still got the same offensive coordinator, and we're still not getting it done in the red zone. So what do you think about that?
Well, Jeff, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. The red zone has been a troubling issue for this team, not just this season, the last few seasons, but I don't think it's solely on the offensive coordinator. I know that's the convenient excuse and the convenient person to turn to. Part of it is, the way the offensive line has performed the last few seasons. They have not been able to establish the run. When was the last time that the Giants have scared you within the 5-yard line and that they've been able to punch it in time and time again? Other teams that have been so effective across this league and thrive in the red zone have a reliable running game. If you don't have a reliable running game, it's very hard to do that. And we welcome in a reliable host in John Schmelk, who has got a lot of nuggets I'm sure that he will throw our way. Would you like to chime in on these red zone issues?
Look, you got to run the football lines. We've talked about this a bunch, and one of the teams that I've noticed this year, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I bet you their numbers are extremely good in the red zone, is the Seattle Seahawks. They not only have a quarterback that can run it, but they have a power running game of Marshawn Lynch. They can give him the ball, and he can pound it into the end zone. And if you can run it inside the 5-yard line, with that shrunken field, it gives you a much better chance to pound it. And when's the last time the Giants, heck, even had a first and goal inside the 5-yard line and could run it 3 straight times to try to get it in? I don't remember. I don't remember a point where they were actually able to do that. They had enough confidence in their offensive line to simply pound the ball in the end zone.
Here's another thing that's also hurt them in the red zone: turnovers.
Yeah.
And not just this season. I know it's convenient to say, Eli Manning has all those interceptions. I remember games, and I think it was the Cowboys game. The game when Boley returns the interception, for example, he gets shut down at the 2.
Yeah.
And then I believe they gave it to Bradshaw, and he fumbled the ball. Or maybe that was the Titans game I'm thinking about against Vince Young. We're talking 2-3 years ago.
That's
and they had
longer than that.
They had an opportunity.
Oh, 6.
In the red zone. Well, all of these situations that
right.
I'm recalling where the Giants had it maybe within the 5-yard mm-hmm. line, and they've either coughed up the football via fumble, had an interception, settled for a field goal, and mainly it all resorts back to the lack of a running
game. Hey, look, the red zone's a different animal. And they have individual plays that they run in practice. They have whole sections of practice dedicated to the red zone. It's almost like a different offense down there. And what coaches always tell me when I ask them about the red zone is that your execution there has to be better than it is at any other spot on the field. Because it's that condensed field, you have so many players grouped into such a small area. Everybody has to be on their P's and Q's, be on the same page in order to make things work and have success. And look, no matter where the Giants' offense has been this year, red zone or not, their execution has not been good in most respects. So obviously, you would follow that. They would have just as many struggles, if not more, in the red zone, considering they've been sloppy from the receivers to the quarterback to the offensive line. They just haven't had a ton of success.
Even if it's between the 20s, it makes no difference. The Giants have been plagued by issues in terms of moving the football, and that's because of the offensive line,
yep.
the lack of the running game. Listen, there's been a lot of issues on offense. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. On Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go back to the lines. Our good friend Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Giants. This is my call. It's your great show. I'll try to just stay to a couple points because I always seem to get kind of off pace. But since we're talking about my good man, Akeem, once again, I'm just going to offer you guys this because I just want to say, I just feel like he's kind of been the fall guy for no reason. I don't think he's playing his best. Let me just put that out there. But I really don't think there's anything wrong with him physically. And I think to kind of insinuate that is a little offensive to me.
No, Steve, hold on a second. Let's not use the word offensive here. Have you seen Akeem Nicks get the separation from defensive backs this year that you've seen in years past? Have you seen him simply run past cornerbacks playing man coverage and be wide open down the field getting behind the defense? Have you seen that once this whole year?
I don't think his game has ever been predicated on, you know, separation. I see him being more of a physical wide out as opposed to a speed demon. It's just a matter of opinion. I just never thought he was like a speed demon ever. I thought he was more of a physical, put it in his area and he'll go get it type of receiver. But, I mean, it's okay. Listen, we can respectfully disagree on that, guys. I just think that the common denominator to the passing problems has been Eli. And I just think I'd rather spend more time talking about what we can do to solve his problems than Hakeem's problems, because if you really look at it, he hasn't been targeted a great deal. You could say, oh, it's because he's not open. I'll give you that.
Yeah, Steve, I don't know why. Steve, I hear you, and Eli has not played well, and that is a big part of it, no doubt about it. But how are Victor Cruz's numbers this year?
Not the ones that he had last year.
Actually, he's on pace to have a better year than he had last year.
Is he?
Either better or very, very close. I'd have to look at the numbers. He's not having the year he had 2 years ago in the Super Bowl year for sure. But I think his numbers
yardage
compared to last year are probably very comparable. I would honestly have to do the math on it.
I'm not even going to bring Hakeem up again. Y'all know how I feel about Hakeem, so I'll leave that alone.
Okay.
But I did want to talk about Beeson, because after watching, you know, first of all, when we first got him and I found out he was cut from Panthers, and then I found out that, you know, Blackburn had beat him, I'm like, oh my God, what are we getting? And then I watched the Panthers game last night, and I was like, wow, those dudes fly around, they're physical. Now I see where he gets his enthusiasm from. And it makes me feel a lot better to, you know, see the talent that those guys had on their squad. And I'm just wondering, you know, first of all, you know, it's great to see this guy's motivation. I'm kind of wondering what makes him tick, because he's a great player, and I think he makes everybody around him better. But on a light note, guys, real quick question. I just wanted to find out, you know, I know, like me and like everybody else, I was screaming for Lewis Murphy. I was screaming for Cox on the kickoff returns. Now I'm thinking maybe we need to just keep Cox inactive, because I don't think he brings enough on the kickoff return to sit Hillis and to make Hillis inactive. I think we're going to need Hillis down the road. And I want to know what you guys' opinion is. Do you think that Cox is going to give us enough to make it worth it, or do you think we should possibly keep, you know, Brandon and obviously Brown and Hillis as our three running backs?
Well, I think they're going to utilize all three of the running backs, assuming they're all healthy. And, Steve, appreciate the phone call. We were talking about this yesterday, John. If it comes down to deciding between Brandon Jacobs and Peyton Hillis, if you can't activate both of them, I think Hillis brings more to the table because he can at least be that receiving threat.
Well, I think Jacobs has too much of an overlap of a skill set with Andre Brown. Both guys, I think, are good in between the tackles. They're both good in terms of getting that extra yard and falling forward. And I feel like there's a repeat of the skill set there. I'm not saying that Peyton Hillis is a better player than Brandon Jacobs, but I think he gives you more of what a guy maybe like Andre Brown doesn't as a receiver. Not that Brown's a bad receiver, but you can't play him 35 touches a game.
He'll never last.
Exactly. You got to give him some rest. So I think if you're going to take Andre Brown out of the game, I think you take him out in third down situations, and I think Hillis is a better third down guy you can use than Brandon Jacobs. Even though Hillis did have some pass protection issues in that last game that he played 2 games ago, I just think Hillis brings a different skill set than Andre Brown, which is why I think I would probably go with him instead of Jacobs. But the coaches obviously feel differently. They know a lot better than me, and they went with Jacobs last week.
And to answer Steve's question, John, I don't think we're going to see a game where all three of them are going to be active for the same contest.
No, I mean, if Michael Cox isn't active, you can have all three backs active.
You think that'll happen, though? See, I'd be surprised if they really go that resort. I think that they'd rather have the insurance on special teams, especially what's taken place with Jernigan and some of the other issues they've had.
Well, going into the game last week, the thought is that the decision was going to be between Cox and Jacobs, and one of those two guys were going to be active. So, we'll see. Honestly, I don't see them changing it from last week. I would expect this week, assuming Jacobs' knees hold up and his knee's fine, I would expect to see the same group of running backs in the exact same spots as they were last week. Why mess with success? And say what you want about Michael Cox, didn't put the ball on the ground. And that's the most thing. That's the most important thing Coach Coughlin's concerned about.
Especially when it comes to this team and
yep.
all the issues that it's had in terms of holding on to the football.
And going up against a team like the Cowboys that really, if they get turnovers, they win. If they don't get turnovers, they don't.
And that's the one thing that I was going to note at the top of the show. As bad as the defense has been, John, they've been an opportunistic group.
Third in takeaways in the
NFL. And that is something that they did not do very well with last season. Before we get back to the lines, I was doing some homework. I know I had referenced a couple of those previous games with the Giants having their red zone issues, so I looked it up. The game where Michael Boley had the interception and returned it was week one last season.
That was against Dallas,
against
right?
Against Dallas.
Right.
So what happened after that interception in which Boley was stopped at the Dallas 2 and there was the horse collar tackle that put him at the 1. Ahmad Bradshaw runs for negative 2 yards. Bradshaw then runs for negative 1 yard.
Okay, so you're back at the 4 at that point.
Third and 4 from the Dallas 4. Manning incomplete pass to Cruz. They settle for 3 points. So that was one situation in the red zone that stuck out to me.
Was that? I'm trying to think if that was. I think that might have been a slant to Cruz that he might have actually been able to catch it. He didn't come up with the play. I don't quite remember.
And if memory serves me correctly, I think people were arguing that it was pass interference on that play where Cruz was held.
Yeah, you might be right.
For some reason,
something like there was some kind of controversy on that Cruz slant. I don't remember what it was, but there was something with that. That play. I definitely remember that.
Then I take you back to 2010, the Tennessee Titans game,
Ooh,
where I was talking about Bradshaw fumbling. This was a situation in which the Titans are up 19-10, and the Giants are making some noise. This is a drive that starts first and 10 from their own 11. They get all the way to the Tennessee 6.
Okay.
Right after Bradshaw gets a 20-yard run, first and goal.
Was Vince Young the quarterback that game?
Vince Young was the
quarterback.
Wow,
okay. That was one of his last games for Tennessee.
Bradshaw runs left tackle to the 5 for yard. He fumbles the ball recovered by Tennessee.
Yeah.
So, you know, turnovers, the lack of a power running game, these have been prevalent over the last few seasons.
No doubt about it. Red zone has to get better. And the Cowboys, by the way, are one of the top red zone teams in the league. They convert almost 60% of their red zone opportunities into touchdowns.
It's funny how they're going the complete opposite of what Green Bay brought to the table. The Packers were one of the worst teams in terms of defending the red zone. Now you get one of the best teams in the league.
And the Packers, one of the best teams on third downs. The Cowboys, one of the worst teams on converting third downs near the bottom of the league, around, I think, 33%.
Complete 180 in terms of the opponent they're getting. And one last thing that I wanted to piggyback off of Steve from DC's point, and I know he likes to stir the pot a little bit about the Akeem Nicks.
That's all right. He has strong opinions. It's all good.
Absolutely.
We like it.
We do not turn him away for that. You know, Akeem Nicks in that 2011 season, John, he was getting separation. Remember that play he beats Patrick Peterson in the Cardinals game for that go-ahead touchdown? That's separation to me.
Well, and also run after the catch. After he caught the ball the last couple of years, before this injury last season, he caught the ball, and he was a threat to go all the way on every play. When's the last time we've seen Akeem Nicks have an explosive run after the catch? The play last week, he caught that quick screen one-on-one. I believe it was against Tremont Williams on the goal line, or maybe it wasn't Williams. I don't remember. No, Williams was in the slot in that play. He was one-on-one on a Packer cornerback. Not important. I'm not seeing the forest and the trees here. And it wasn't Casey Hayward. So he had one-on-one catching the ball against the Packers cornerback. He didn't run over him, and he couldn't shake him. He got tackled for a one-yard gain. And I just think you're seeing a lack of explosiveness, and I think you're seeing more of a carryover from that knee injury than maybe a lot of people expected this year.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. On Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. A little bit later on the show, we will go over some of the tweets. I know a lot of people have been chiming in there. We go to our good friend Len in Columbia, Maryland. And the big question is, Len, is the Bruno Mars wristband still on the hand?
I tell you, I put it back in the safety deposit box last night. And I'm going to pull it out again on Sunday morning. We're 4-0. We're 4-0 with my Bruno Mars wristband. That's pretty good. Thanks for remembering. I appreciate it. You know, I just, if there's one play in the last 5 years that bothers me, maybe even longer than that, and you had to bring it up this morning, the horse collar on Boley in that opening game last season. I tell you, I know you don't like it when I say this, but I'm going to say it. There are certain situations where somebody resorts to a horse collar, which is normally a 15-yard penalty. And does it as a touchdown saving maneuver.
That's correct.
The chance of hurting somebody. Steve Smith, there are certain situations where that should be a touchdown, guys.
You can't do that, though.
I know. I don't want to go back to it. I've been saying it for 2 years. That play bothers me more than any play I've seen in the last 10 years. Player safety important. Don't let horse collars stop touchdown runs.
Now, Len.
Don't let horse collars.
Len, I'll tell you, Lance was pretty proud of himself about pulling that play out of his bag of tricks. Now he's thrilled with himself that he did it just because he got on your nerves.
Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished.
I don't believe that. I don't believe
Oh, you got to see the smile on his face. He's beaming.
I am
beaming.
Smiling. I'm not going to deny that.
All right, listen, let me move on to some more move on to some more important stuff. And maybe you know the quick answer to this question. When was the last time we played three games in a row at home? It's got to be 20 years. Okay, do you know offhand when the last time we played three?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's coming at a nice time.
I feel like that's something Dan Salamo would know. Dan, what do you got? You got anything? Last time Giants played through straight at home? You got nothing? Wow.
I'm going to go through the last few seasons here.
No, not even winning three straight.
No, no, just playing.
Yeah, just playing. No,
you know what? I vaguely remember, I think it might have been 2009 or 2008, the Giants had a stretch of games in the middle of the season, and I think they might have had three straight games at home one of those two seasons. There might have been a bye in between, actually. But I think I remember having two games at home, a bye, and then the third one after the bye, or something
that. I'm not complaining because we're winning. So,
right.
I mean, that's the good news. Well, you know, you love to play home games, but it just seems to me it is somewhat of an oddity that we're playing three in a row at home. But it's come at a good time. Listen, I'm exaggerating a little bit because I don't know the chapter numbers in the playbook. But let's skip over Chapter 8, Red Zone Offense, and go to Chapter 9, Deception. I think we're going to see some things this week we haven't seen, and even if we got lucky enough to see it in training camp, I think we're pulling out all stops this weekend on that playbook. I think we're going to see formations, pass runs, plays. I think we pull out all stops.
Len, by the way, the last time the Giants had three straight games at home, Lance did a good job bringing this up, 2006. Beat Tampa 17-3, beat Houston 14-10, and then in Game 3, they lost to Chicago 38-20. So that was the last time they had three straight home games.
Wow, three straight home games in a row, and there was no bye involved. Thank you
no,
very
sir.
Much for looking that up.
No bye, yeah.
Looking that up on short notice. Inside, you get in the red zone. I hate to keep quoting Phil Sims, but it's all about deception. I mean, look at the Patriot last night. They complete a 48-yard touchdown pass to the one. Well, it doesn't take them 30 seconds to snap the ball. You know, get the play in, point to where the tight end should be, go into a traditional lineup with, you know, three tight ends on the field. I mean, come on, run up to the line of scrimmage, call a play and run it. Have the play set. I mean, it takes a little creativity when we get inside that red zone. But I think we're going to see it this weekend. I think we're going to see stuff we haven't seen at all. And hopefully it turns out, best for us. You alluded to the weather. You know, it looks like wind this weekend. Field position. Dance with the one who brung you, as Tom Coughlin would say, build on the momentum. And the momentum was started 4 or 5 weeks ago in stopping the run. Let's just emphasize that again. Let's shut down the run, put Romo in second and third and long, and then this is it. Here's my pick for player of the game on Sunday. Statement game this weekend, Linville Joseph. Pressure up the middle on Tony on second and seven. Third and nine, big game, Linville. Let's go, buddy. You want that second contract as a defensive tackle? You got to be like Gerald McCoy from Tampa Bay this weekend.
Yeah, he played a heck of a game.
Three sacks from the tackle position. Come on, Linville, get to the quarterback. Big game from Linville Joseph this weekend. All right, Giants, let's go. We'll talk later in a week.
All right, Len, thanks for the call, buddy. Appreciate it as always, and Len will be coming up for that Cowboys game on shore. Supposed to be a cold one at the Meadowlands on Sunday as well, in the 30s, I think.
And the last time it was windy, remember Steve Weatherford had some trouble, so it could affect special teams once again.
Offensively, though, I mean, I guess maybe it helps Dallas a little bit more than the Giants, and the only reason I say that, I think both offenses are both, you know, dependent on the pass. Dallas probably a little bit more so. They have one of the higher pass-to-run ratios in football. The DeMarco Murray, since he's been back, has run the ball extremely well. He even ran the ball against the Saints last week. The Cowboys got down big, though. They had to give up on the run. But I think where that probably helps Dallas with the high wins is that their secondary has struggled so much. Anything that they can get – that makes an opposing team go away from the passing game would probably help. Then again, without Sean Lee, they also allowed the Saints to run for 230 yards. So
very up and down.
Yeah, well,
by the Cowboys,
mostly down. There wasn't much up in that game.
Well, and you know what? If you're the Giants' defense, considering how effective they've been against the run, John, you want the Cowboys to run the football.
Yeah, at least to try to.
Exactly. I mean, that's how you want to set the tone.
From what I've been hearing, I've been trying to do some research on the Cowboys during this bye week. You know, Jerry Jones does his weekly interview on the radio and all that stuff. I get the sense that they're going to try to be a little bit more aggressive in early downs on offense, trying to go down the field a little bit more. Now, talking to the couple guys that have watched some of these games on tape the Cowboys have played recently, you know, there's been some criticism in the media that maybe the Cowboy offense is too conservative, don't throw it down the field as much. From what I've been told, the team's been playing a lot of cover two against them, playing a lot of guys deep down the field, and not really giving the opportunity to throw down the field. We'll see what the Giants do on Sunday, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Cowboys take some early in the game first and second down shots down the field, especially if the Giants are double-teaming Dez Bryant, try to mat up Miles Austin, who should be back from that hamstring he practiced yesterday for the Cowboys, or getting that man-to-man on Terrence Williams, who's had some success this year, and try to hit one of those two guys for some big plays down the field, even Dwayne Harris.
Well, the one guy that gave the Giants a lot of trouble in that opener was, remember, Jason Witten, and that was because Dan Connor got hurt, Mark Herzlick comes in, and if you remember the very first play, Herzlick comes in, they go to Witten in the end zone. Now you have John Beeson in the mix, which you didn't have in week one. That should be a big bonus for the Giants.
And a healthier Jaquan Williams, too, and a Jaquan Williams that's playing a lot better football than he did then as well. Miles Austin actually led the Cowboys in receiving in that first game against the Cowboys. He used them a lot in those short little slant passes. So I'll be interested to see how the Giants defend them. If I'm the Giants, I take a page out of the playbook of all these other teams that have faced the Dallas Cowboys. I put two guys on Dez Bryant early and often, whether it's at the line of scrimmage or bracket them or have one guy short, one guy deep over the top. And you try to take him out of the game mentally early. Because we've seen it with Dez Bryant. When early in these games, he doesn't get the passes he wants. He doesn't get the attention. He can lose focus a little bit. I honestly don't think he's a bad kid. I think he's kind of gotten over a lot of those issues off the field. I think, you know, did you guys see the stories how he randomly bought like six PlayStation 4s for people at the Walmart? So I think he's past being that guy. But he still has some immaturity issues on the field that he has to get over. Even if it's more visual and superficial than it is actual stuff that's really affecting the team, it's still bad. And I think if you're the Giants, you try to get him into that bad state of mind to take him out of the game early so he doesn't hurt you late.
I think it's an example of a guy that's very passionate about football, and sometimes the passion is a little too much.
I agree.
That's probably what has been most evident with respect to Dez Bryant. You mentioned those slants. The Giants should know about slants. Kevin Ogletree ring a bell, by the way. Last time they went up against the Cowboys, and the Cowboys did damage with those slants in that week one opener last season.
And by the way, Cole Beasley's become a very big part of this offense since that week one matchup, too. He's a good slot guy. He's your classic, you know, poor man's Wes Welker type of slot guy. Not going to go down the field a lot of short stuff around the line of scrimmage.
201-939-4513. Back to the lines. We go to Mike in New York. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I actually, you know, wanted to talk about Eli's pass consistency.
Sure.
Because there is one area where he's, and let's talk about, you know, there's a six lost Eli and there's four win Eli. Right now, four win Eli over the middle is like unstoppably accurate. He was 5 for 5 for 93 yards last night. He's been extremely good in the middle of the numbers, down the middle. And our longest pass of the night to Hakeem Nicks, 35 yards last night. So there's that. I mean, he's there. He's not playing that great. No, I'm not going to defend Nicks completely, but he still does some stuff for us. But when Eli tries to throw outside or long, it's like the pocket just doesn't exist. It's so inconsistent whether it's there or whether it's not. He's throwing the ball too early or too late. It's underthrown. It's overthrown. There's just no, it just seems like the balloon around him gets small really quick, even though the line has been slowly, very slowly getting better.
No, Mike, look, Mike, I agree, and I think the big thing with Eli, look, he's never been, to me, the most pinpoint accurate passer in the league, but where he's been especially good over the course of his career is hitting guys on those deep posts down the middle of the field, hitting them on those fly patterns down the sideline. His best throw has always been the deep ball, but for the past season and a half, I'd say, the pass just hasn't been as accurate as it has earlier in his career. And I think in the end, that's really what's killing a lot of his production and a lot of the big plays, offensive line problems aside. I agree with you. Those have been a big issue this year as well.
And I think part of the, they're linked. They have to be.
Oh, sure. I agree.
He can't. You see, sometimes he'll be able to step in, up into the pocket and deliver a nice strike. And other times the pocket will collapse, and he'll just be like, where do I go? I can't. I got to start running, and I'm Eli Manning. Why am I running?
And he did that a few times in this last game.
And you know what? It's better than him just trying to throw the ball or stand there or whatever. I think the weirdest thing I saw last night, Sunday, was our screen game. Our screen game doesn't work with two or three people, but our screen game works with, like, two people or one person just squirting out. Like, I don't understand that. But at least there's some screens working. And,
they got one to turn again. It took them a long time.
It's progress, Mike. It's progress.
Yes. Wide receiver screens, it works. I mean, I know Jernigan's there for some reason. But, yeah, thanks, guys. I'm excited. I think we're going to crush the Cowboys. And injuries have been on our side, but I'll take it. Win is a win.
Hey, exactly. You got to play the team that they put out there on the field across the field from you, Mike. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And the Cowboys, look, offensively, they're fine. They still score a lot of points. They have a lot of weapons. I don't think they've been as productive, as they would have liked over the past few weeks. However, their defense is a mess. The Giants, if this passing game lands, is ever going to get healthy. And we've said this a couple weeks before. I understand that. But no other team has given up more passing yards than the Cowboys. No other team has allowed four 400-yard quarterbacks this year. No other team has given up 600 yards of total offense. Not once, but twice in the past 3 weeks. If the Giants' passing game can't succeed against Dallas this week, it's not going to succeed the rest of the season. That's it. I will give up hope. If they can't do it this week, it is what it is, and you're going to have to live with it.
This is definitely an attractive matchup. However, with that being said, John, that doesn't mean that Eli Manning should turn around and throw it 45 times. They still need to stick to the run.
No question. I'm not saying air it out, because the Cowboys have had trouble stopping the run the last couple weeks, too. They've rotated a lot of defensive linemen. Aside from their four starters, assuming Hatcher and Ware are both going to play this week, along with Hayden and Selby, they got a bunch of guys off the street as their second-string defensive linemen. So if the Cowboys rotate their defensive linemen a lot, which they're prone to do, you can really take advantage of those backups by running the football. And the Cowboys have not tackled over the last few weeks either. You can really make some big plays after contact.
They haven't done anything quite well the last few weeks.
Not defensively.
That's the best way to sum things up.
And no Sean Lee either. So, I mean, that is a huge loss.
You mentioned George Selvie, and he's a guy that maybe most Giants fans and most NFL fans are not familiar with because he's filling in for Anthony Spencer. He wasn't a starter last season, and they had just picked him up. But yep. He's been quite productive, John, in that starting role this year.
I'll tell you what. I know people want to talk about DeMarcus Ware, and look, he's a terror. You got to make sure Beattie handles him. But to me, maybe the biggest key for the Giants' offensive success this week is how the right side, of their offensive line, David Deal and Justin Pugh, block Jason Hatcher and George Selvie. Because those two guys have 13.5 sacks combined. I believe Jason Hatcher leads all defensive tackles in both quarterback pressures and in sacks. And David Deal, I know the line's been better since he's gotten back, but he's had some issues this year against speed guys. And Hatcher's a speed guy. He can do a little bit of everything. And Selvie's 270 pounds. He's 6'4". He's size. He's physical. Justin Pugh, I want to see him handle George Selvie outside. I want to see Deal handle Hatcher. That, to me, is, if I'm the Giants, that's what I worry about the most in terms of protecting your quarterback. Those two guys on the left side. And then, of course, you got DeMarcus Ware coming around Will Beattie. And that, to me, is if the Giants are going to have trouble with this Cowboys defense, that's where they're going to have issues, blocking those three guys on the defensive line. If they can do that, there's no reason they shouldn't light up the scoreboard and score. Probably, I would say, the most points they've scored all year, if they can stop those three pass rushers.
Well, Dallas is sometimes the cure to an offense that has had its issues. And keep in mind, George Selvie came from the same school as JPP. And out of college, Selvie, there was a lot more hype surrounding Selvie than JPP. He was considered to be the next up-and-coming defensive end. It took him a little longer time for that to come to fruition, obviously. Let's head back to the lines, 201-939-4513. We go to Keith in Kentucky. Keith, welcome to the program. What you got?
How you fellas doing?
What's up, Keith?
Yeah, I'm about to be quick. I think if the line keeps Eli upright for the most part, we need a lot more production out of the tight ends, knowing that the linebacker core for the Dallas Cowboys is kind of banged up, and Bruce Carter's having some issues covering tight ends. Brandon Myers, he ain't been able to get too much separation, and he ain't really been reliable. So I was kind of wondering, what's going on with Adrian Robinson? You know, he's big, he's fast. You know, I just want to see him out there, see if we can get a spark somewhere, because that's been Eli's bailout throughout his whole career, the tight ends. And now that we don't really have that too much, you know, Eli's kind of struggling.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard Adrian Robinson is big and fast, I probably wouldn't be sitting here next to John Schmoke right now.
And you know what? In years past, when we're asked about guys like either Jernigan or Barden or Lewis Murphy Jr., we can give you good reasons, football reasons, why these guys aren't out there playing. And it's hard for me to put my finger on why Adrian Robinson can't see the field just a little bit. You know, Larry Donnell still seems to be ahead of him on the depth chart. You know, Bear Pasco's out there, which is understandable. He's a reliable veteran. He's good. And Myers, obviously, a good pass catcher. But I agree. I think you can see Robinson out there a little bit. Again, they kept him on IR. They literally wasted a roster spot for 8 weeks, to keep Adrian Robinson available once he came off that IR. Now that he's back, we're still not seeing him. So I'm not sure what they're waiting for.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we got to get him out there. Don't waste the roster spot. We just got to see what he can do before we let him go, you know?
I hear you, Keith. Thanks a lot, man.
Keith, appreciate the phone call. And as John mentioned, you got four tight ends on the roster. You've had injuries at other positions. And each and every week we're asked about why they're still keeping four tight ends when they can use it for another position.
Hey, look,
depth.
And I'm not advocating having four running backs active. But who's giving you more, your fourth tight end or Payne Hillis?
Who will give
you more in a game? I don't think there's any doubt Payne Hillis will give you more in the game than the fourth tight end. I know the fourth tight end will give you more special teams probably. That's fine. But, look, I haven't seen Adrian Robinson making plays on specials left and right.
And he's been a healthy scratch more often than not. He reminds me almost like Marvin Austin last season, where Marvin Austin was a healthy scratch every single week, and you were wondering, are they going to use him in any capacity? What's going to happen? Is he going to have an opportunity to make a statement?
Before we get back to the calls, I want to touch on his other point. Because I thought he made a good one in terms of getting it to the tight ends over the middle. I'm going to expand that. To me, you just attack the middle of the field. I don't care if you're throwing it to a receiver, a running back, a tight end, whatever. The Cowboys, despite the fact that Jerry Jones said last week that he wants them to play more man defense, they're still primarily a zone team. They play more man than a lot of other cover two teams, but they're still a cover two zone type of team. And even if they're playing man, the Cowboys, that's fine. The middle of the field where you have Sean Lee out, and the Cowboy linebackers, as Keith mentioned, he's correct, have struggled against the pass. Bruce Carter was benched earlier this year. They brought Ernie Sims in for him, who's starting at Mike this week. Then Ernie Sims stunk, so they had to bring Bruce Carter back in. And now you got both of those guys out there, along with a Rob Holloman, who's probably going to start, Devontae Holloman, that's going to start at the other outside linebacker spot. And he's had 17 regular season snaps in his NFL career. Now, he made some plays in the preseason. He had a couple picks for the Cowboys, but look, these are three guys the Giants should be able to take advantage of and attack the middle of that field. That's where the Cowboys' defense has struggled. That zone in the middle, the linebackers and their safeties as well, have struggled defending that area of the field. They're not good cover guys. They've struggled tackling. I don't care that Wilcox is back in the lineup. The Giants should eat up that area between the numbers and between the hash marks.
That's why I'm a little leery that it's going to be Brandon Myers who's going to have the big game. And when you weren't here, Kendall from Canada, who always calls in and makes his bold prediction, said that this is going to be the game that Brandon Myers gets two touchdowns. And I said, that is a very, very bold prediction,
you
considering
know,
what Myers has put up.
Next time Kendall calls in, I want to get his opinion on Bob Ford, who is very entertaining, by the way. The Toronto mayor. Did you see him yesterday running around and he knocked over the person at the council meeting?
Yes. Listen, we could take Big Blue Kickoff Live wherever you'd like to go.
And rest in peace. God rest his soul. I wish Chris Farley was around to do him on Saturday Night Live. That would
very
just
fitting. Oh,
I forget the guy's name. He did him last week on the opening skit of the show. He's actually pretty funny. Bobby something. I forget his name. The big guy. And he actually did a pretty good job, but I would love to see Chris Farley play Bob Ford on Saturday Night Live. Classic.
He'd have plenty of material.
Yeah, he would.
To do plenty of different skits, I'll tell you that, because this mayor in Toronto is certainly not lacking in that category. Let's head back to the lines. We got Jesse in Maryland. Jesse, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Jesse.
Hey, look, I wanted to talk about the defense. I know everyone had their opinions on Hakeem Nicks, and I think it's going to be what it's going to be with him. He's just going to have to step up. But the defense, you know, Lance, you made a comment at the beginning of the show where an argument could have been made where they were the Achilles heel this year. And I kind of disagree. I think it's just not so much you can do when the offense can't sustain drives and the defense is out there for majority of the time. But during the win streak, the Giants have been able to sustain some drives and take up some of the possession or most of the possession of the game, which allowed the defense to do what they have to do. But then as well on the defense, I think the defensive line has to do a better job of sacking the quarterback on the first hit. I mean, how many times have we seen it where they'll hit the quarterback, but then it'll be the scramble broken play.
That's a great point.
For example, the Terrell Pryor.
Great point.
And I think with the quarterbacks coming up, they really have to complete the tackles on the first hit. And then I'm really not too sold on Tremaine McBride just yet. I mean, let's just think about who he's been covering, you know. And
that's
this past
true.
Week he gave up a big play, you know. So, I mean, Tremaine McBride's going to have to definitely step up. You know, I don't know if he's going to be covering Garcon coming up or if he's going to be covering Dez Bryant coming up. You know, it's just going to be a lot of – they're going to be tested. You know, I mean, everyone's been saying that they're going to be tested, especially the last few games of the season. So I really do believe that the defense is going to carry the Giants the rest of the season, just like Kiwanuka said. I mean, the offense are going to have to come through, and I hope that they do, but the defense has to maintain that spectacular play that they've been having. You know, so, I mean, that's just basically what I wanted to say. Thank you for taking my call. My first time calling. I hope to call back several more times.
Yeah.
You got it, Jesse. Thanks so much.
Jesse, we love to have you, and I think you made a lot of great points there. And I think this is a bellwether game for both the Giants team and the Giants defense. Look, and it's nobody's fault, and the Giants did what they had to do, and you don't give back any of these wins. But the last four victories have come as part of a very soft landing spot in their schedule, against a lot of teams that were struggling offensively because of injuries and other decisions. Whether you're talking about Terrell Pryor, who played on one leg last week, that was so bad he sat out this week's game because he was so unproductive. Scott Tolzien never started an NFL game, who, by the way, went for 300 yards against your secondary.
A lot of big plays.
Go back to Philadelphia, Michael Vick on one leg, no Nick Foles, Matt Barkley for 2.5 quarters. Go back a week to Josh Freeman played one of the worst in, you know, and it's funny, I did it the other day in front of friends. They're like, why do you keep saying that? Like, I don't know. and like I said, Josh Freeman played one of the worst single games at quarterback in the history of the NFL in terms of the raw numbers of it. So, again, the Giants defense did what they had to do. They played great football. But now you got Tony Romo. You have Dez Bryant. You have Miles Austin. You have Jason Witten. You have DeMarco Murray. And then, don't hold your breath, folks, RG3, even though we struggled, Alfred Morris, Pierre Garcon, Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates and company,
Keenan Allen,
Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Percy Harvin, who should be playing still for that game, Golden Tate, Matthew Stafford, Megatron, and then the Redskins once again. So the soft stretch is over. We're going to know exactly what this defense is in two or three games, whether or not it was a result of competition or because they were playing that well. And I think it's probably somewhere in between that this is a good defense, not a great one. They've looked great because the competition probably was a little weak. That's probably where I'm landing on this whole thing. But we're going to find out because these last six games are not easy from a defensive standpoint by any means.
Well, and Jesse brought up the fact that Tremaine McBride has had some issues in terms of his coverage. Prince Amukamara, though, you could point to, has also had some issues. He was beat on that James Jones play against the Packers. I think that the secondary has held up given all the injuries that they've had to deal with. But you're right. Now, all of a sudden, you take into consideration the level of wide receivers that they're going to see. And most of these teams don't just have one guy. They have multiple guys that you need to watch out for. So it's not as if you put Prince on your best guy and then you leave Tremaine with the third-tier, fourth-tier guy. Tremaine McBride is going to see some top-tier wide receivers who may be the number two option.
Tell me if I'm crazy. The strength of this Giants defense is now defensive tackle, linebacker, and safety.
I don't think corner is the strength at all of this team. I think the safeties have helped cover up some of the issues.
Or the DNs.
Well, they've never been very good effectively in getting the sacks and the quarterback hits from the edge, at least.
But look at everything they have invested in those positions. Terrell Thomas, a second-round pick. Aaron Russell from a first-round pick. Corey Webster's been a starter. You're a second-round pick. Prince, a number one pick. Defensive end, JPP, Tuck, Keeley. Go down the list. It's funny how this defense has shifted. I mean, the safeties have played great football. John Beeson has single-handedly turned around not only middle linebacker, he's gotten the other two linebackers playing better football, and the defensive tackles have been a strength all year long. It's just funny how things shift over the course of the season.
Well, it's another example, John, how the identity of this team has completely transformed,
yeah.
Even on offense.
No
on
question.
Offense, it used to be known as the big play. Now it's known as the team that relies on short passes and hopes to get the ground game going. On defense, like you mentioned, this is a defense that was known to get to the quarterback. Now it's known as a defense that does most of its damage in the middle of the field and stops the run. So things have really turned around. Never would have thought you would have described a team like this.
It's crazy. It really is.
201-939-4513. Twitter, hashtag Giants chat. Ramesh in Virginia. Ramesh, what's happening?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Ramesh.
I was at the game I'm doing good. I was at the game last week. It was my first time, so I had a great time there. I saw you guys at the booth, but, you know, I saw Paulie, you guys, but I couldn't just come say hello. I think you were busy doing the show. I don't know. I couldn't recognize the lady who was sitting next to Lance. But overall, great. I had a great time.
That's our producer, Ramesh.
Yeah, Lisa.
Yeah, that's our producer.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. But, yeah, John, I agree with your comments. I think the passing game definitely needs to step up. This is the game that they need to, or if not, I'll probably lose hope as well, just like you, and because their secondary is banged up, as we know. So this probably is the game of our season. If we don't get this, probably I think we're going to pretty much be done for this season.
Hey, look, Ramesh, bottom line, you have three games the rest of this year that, to me, are must-wins, and you cannot afford to
this
lose.
This one and two Redskins game?
You got it.
Yep,
that's what I thought too. I had a question and a quick prediction. Is our defense, now I'm comparing to the first game we played against Dallas, I think our defense is good enough to stop, but do we still have, you know, some concerns about how we going to stop Witten? And I know maybe we're going to double 88. Who's the other?
Des Bryant.
I mean, are we good enough? Like, if we double Des Bryant, can we still stop Jason Witten, because I know he's had, like, big games amongst the past.
Honestly, Ramesh, if you double-team Des Bryant, I don't think you're going to stop Jason Witten, but can you contain him? Might he catch seven passes?
Yeah.
Sure, but if you can hold him to seven catches for, like, 52, 55 yards, you live with that. You don't want him to get those seven, eight catches for 90 yards. That's where he's really going to hurt you.
Right. Okay. And is Ware back? I know in the last game, I think he was hurt. So is DeMarcus Ware back to 100%? I know they had a bye this week. So is he going to be full go?
I don't think he's 100%, but he's getting there in the right direction.
He didn't practice on Monday. They seem to indicate they think he'll be back on Wednesday. Look, DeMarcus Ware has only missed, I think, three games in his NFL career. Two of them came this season.
Uh-huh.
This is the biggest game of the year for Dallas, just like it is the biggest game of the year for the Giants. So I'd be shocked if DeMarcus Ware isn't out there, and like Lance said, he probably won't be 100%, but even last week, not 100% against the Saints, he was still all over the field. So
you still need to account.
Exactly.
All right, big prediction, guys. I think Nick is due. I think he's going to get his first touchdown of the year, and my prediction is 27-17. Let's go, Giants. Let's get this win.
All right, good one.
Thank you guys for taking the call and continue listening.
Hey, great. Call back anytime. Good call out of Ramesh. And stop by the radio stage anytime.
And he should know, and we should tell the rest of the audience. See, we have multiple producers on staff because although John Schmelke is considered the executive producer,
that's
he's
correct.
Very high maintenance, and he can only do so much himself during the course
of the
radio.
Well, you have to have
world.
People manning different stations. We have different locations. I can't be in two places at once, Lance.
But there are some people that have the talent to overcome some of those obstacles.
Well, when you have to micromanage and coddle your host around like I do, you really can't split your direction in too many different places.
There's no host
and by the way, no one's happier than the fans when Peter Bellotti's not there to produce the pregame show and Lisa Latino's there instead.
Yes, well, clearly Ramesh, that caught his attention.
She is engaged, though, folks,
yes,
so
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Off the market.
Yes, can't do it.
The competition clause is done. All right, let's head back to the lines before we take this show to some place we don't want to. Let's go.
We already did.
Ed in Houston. Ed, what's happening?
Good morning, fellas. How y'all doing today?
What's up, Ed?
Yeah, you sound nice and happy. That's good. Nobody's really called in this morning to get you mad or anything. I think they're saving themselves for marks later in the week.
That's true.
That's
fine. We push them to Wednesdays and Thursdays. Well said.
There you go. The cream of the crop. Exactly. Hey, I'm going to disagree with Kendall about who the big player of the week is going to be for the Giants. You know who it's going to be? It's going to be Lewis Murphy, and I'll explain why. You'll love this. It's going to be windy. You said it's going to be windy on Sunday, right?
Okay.
Okay, so Eli puts up a 40, 45-yard bomb. The ball is going to get caught by the wind, which means the ball is going to come down someplace it was not intended to come down. Considering Murphy is never where he's supposed to be, he's going to be the player of the week.
That's a very interesting thought process there, Ed. I got to give you creativity points for that.
Hey, that's digging deep for something positive.
That is digging deep. That is digging real deep.
Hey, do you think there's a possibility that they could possibly consider using him on kickoff returns, considering he supposedly has some speed, which we've yet to see this year?
I think Lewis Murphy has done punt returns earlier in his career. I'm pretty sure he's never done kick. Lance is going to look that up. But frankly, they never even worked him there, Ed, in preseason or training camp or in practice on either punt or kick. So I think that's pretty unlikely at this point, to be quite honest with you.
That's too bad, considering he's just standing on the sidelines, because here we are, we're talking about with Cox coming up and Jernigan not doing kickoff returns, then they can't use Peyton Hillis. If they can at least get him on the field, either on punt return, well, kickoff returns, that could free up another roster spot to where maybe they could keep Hillis back on the field with the other running back.
Hey, look, and I agree with you, and I think Hillis could be a weapon as a receiver out of the backfield against this Cowboy defense. They play that deep zone. The linebackers often get lost in coverage. I think he could be a weapon. So that is a decision, and I think it's an important one that the Giants will have to make later in the week.
Yeah. Is there somebody on the practice squad now who is a wide receiver? I know they had Hardy earlier in the year. I would think now if Murphy has shown nothing, you think maybe they'd bring one of those guys up if they thought they could contribute.
Right now, I think the Giants are pretty set with who they have at wide receiver, even though Murphy hasn't done a whole lot. There's no one else that's going to come in and be able to give them more than Murphy. We appreciate the call, Ed. Thanks so much.
All right, Ed. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
And I think they'd expand Jarrell Jernigan's role before they reached out to the practice squad.
And I want to talk about the matchups for a second, because I think they're going to be interesting. Now, Morris Claiborne is still battling that ankle injury, all right? And whether or not he plays, I think, is going to play a huge role in this game on Sunday, and here's why. If Claiborne's healthy and the Cowboys' nickel package, which they play more than 50% of the snaps, they probably will again this week if Sean Lee, since Sean Lee's not going to play. Skandrick, if Claiborne is healthy, will move inside with Claiborne outside. That would match up Skandrick on Victor Cruz, and he's done a pretty good job on Victor the last couple times these two teams have played. He's really been the Cowboys' best corner this year. Now, if Claiborne doesn't play, and look, he struggled this year. He has not been great. He's been a disappointment as a top five pick from a couple years ago. B.M. Webb plays the nickel, who played so poorly last week that he got benched against the Saints, and the Cowboys brought in a guy that I remember as Pellegrino. Was that his name? Some corner that, frankly, I'd never even heard of. And he proceeded to get lit up by the Saints as well. And if that guy, or Webb, has to cover Victor Cruz in the slot, that could be a field day for the Giants. Now, I think Brandon Carr will do a good job on Akeem Nicks. I would imagine he's going to be matched up with him for most of the game. And, you know, Claiborne on Randall, I think that is a LSU matchup. That should be an old college matchup between those two guys going up against each other back from their college days. But I think the Giants would be helped an awful lot if Claiborne can't go in this game. Again, not because he's going to lock down Reuben Randall when he's this great corner, but that will allow Randall Skandrick to stay on Victor Cruz in the slot, which I think would benefit the Cowboys greatly. And again, Victor Cruz on B.M. Webb, ooh, that could be a field day, Lance.
Well, the Cowboys have had issues containing Victor Cruz no matter who they put in the slot, dating back the last few seasons, ever since Victor Cruz had his breakout campaign. I mean, they've never had a good slot corner that has been able to really shut down Victor Cruz, or at least play him one-on-one. They've always had to bring help, and that still hasn't worked. Victor Cruz had three touchdowns in the first match.
But Skandrick, a much better matchup than some of the other options they have.
By far. considering Skandrick has experience and the rest of these guys, as you just named, you didn't even know that they existed in the NFL a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Ago. I looked up some of Lewis Murphy's numbers. He has no career punt returns or kickoff
or
returns.
Or neither. Okay.
In terms of his days with the Oakland Raiders, the only thing that I have found is you have to go back to college.
Oh, look at you.
Experience on special.
How about high school?
Well, he did run track and field, I'll tell you that. So that's the furthest I have been able to go back.
In college, what did he do, punt or kicks?
I don't have the exact numbers. I believe he did punt. There is a brief. I'm reading literally the bio from the college.
What
are you
on Wikipedia?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Well, I had to do
always
some
reliable
There's
information.
There's not a lot of statistics from his college.
Where did he go to school, Lewis Murphy?
He went to Florida.
Oh, he went to Florida.
He was a
Gator, huh?
Correct. And he was on the track and field team for Florida too.
What did he run?
He had a personal best of 6.36 seconds in the 55 meters.
There's a. I thought the 100 meter was the shortest race. There's a 55.
Leave
the
it
metric
to Florida.
System. Ugh.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. People are talking about this on Twitter, and this is related to Ramesh's point about how the Giants are going to fare against Jason Witten. And this was something that I also touched on at the beginning of the show, the John Beeson X factor. I think they have different personnel now compared to what they had in that first matchup. So that should bode well, regardless of whether or not they have to double-team Dez or focus on another wide receiver. You've got reliable linebackers this time around. You didn't have that the first time around. All right. Let's close out the show with our final caller, and let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what is happening?
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
What's up, Charlie?
Hey, did you notice this when JPP had the interception and he went on the sideline, and I was watching the game, and he went over to Sean Rogers, and him and Sean Rogers were jumping up and down, you know, doing the bump, bump.
Honestly, I did not notice it, and quite frankly, if Sean Rogers is able to get off the ground more than a couple inches, I would have been impressed.
You know, and he was jumping up and down, you know, so, you know, there again is another great monster move. They could have used Sean Rogers down the road here, but...
No, but Charlie, in fairness, I literally asked about two or three coaches about Sean Rogers and the reason they IR him, and they all said to a man... The guy had 2 weeks off during the bye. He came back off that bye week, and he wasn't healthy enough to practice. So that knee was going to be a problem the entire season, and it wasn't a deal where they just IR'd him for the sake of IR'ing him. They really thought even if he could play the rest of the year, he would be extremely, extremely limited in what he could have given the team.
All right. I'll give you that one at least. And I just wanted to talk about the first Dallas game. I mean, we actually really outplayed Dallas. And they had Sean Lee, and they had everybody. And if we didn't have five turnovers, we would have won that game really fairly easy. So I think we're gonna really take it to Dallas this week. And hopefully the offense, you know, Eli always seems to play well against Dallas. So and he played well in the first game, except for the few interceptions, but they weren't all his fault. So I'm not really worried about this game. I'm more worried about the Washington game at Washington. So I think they're going to do a really good job this week.
Now, Charlie, a couple things, and I know a lot of Giants fans have said, look, they played extremely well against Dallas that first week, and they played well against them in certain respects. And look, they outgained them in that game yardage-wise, 478 to 331. However, those numbers might indicate the Giants dominated the game, but I'm going to show you another number that might indicate otherwise. Do you know what the time of possession was in that game, Charlie?
Well, when you're throwing interceptions all the time, that's probably Dallas has more time of possession.
Yeah, 37-10 to 22-50. So the Cowboys dominated that game in terms of time of possession, which usually means they were the team that controlled the tempo of the game.
Right. Well, the thing, you know, like I said, you know, we had, like, if we only had three turnovers or only four, we probably would have still won the game.
That's fair.
And, you know, and to me, you know, I didn't get a chance to say this when that happened, but I thought Coughlin made a big mistake when he benched Wilson just because, you know, that guy with one play could have changed that whole game, gave him a chance to make up for his mistakes. And I thought that was, you know, that's that old school mentality of let's, sit him down. Let's punish him, you know. I mean, maybe he would have sat him down after the first fumble, but I would have still given him a shot. I would have said, look, man, you're our guy. We got rid of Bradshaw. You're our main guy. You know, if you fumble it 100 times, you're getting the ball the 101st first, and, you know, we know you can change this game around with one play. You know, give the guy the confidence to get out there and do something. And I think he could have turned it around. He could have, one play, he could have changed that whole game. And I wish they had given him the opportunity to do that.
Well, I mean, listen, Charlie, as you mentioned, we can sit here and play the coulda, woulda, shoulda games, but when you turn the ball over six times, it's very hard to overcome that. Not to get off topic, Charlie, but I know you are very big on looking over NFL rosters, and I just wanted to get an update. Jake Ballard, two games under his belt with the Arizona Cardinals. I want to make sure that you put the scouting tape in. Let me hear your feedback on why the Giants should maybe go after Jake Ballard now. I'm missing this here.
He's with Arizona?
Yes, he is Arizona. He had two games. I've been looking at the box scores, anticipating your phone call, because I need to have some prep work to make sure I got some comebacks for you.
Sean Locklear is playing for Tampa Bay.
And you know what? All joking aside, very happy to see Sean Locklear back in a uniform. I honestly thought his career is over. He's a very good guy. He was a good player that suffered a very serious injury. Very nice to see him back in an NFL uniform.
Yeah, well, we should have had him in Ballard. We definitely should have had. Myers is awful.
Hey, this Ballard could be the breakout game, Charlie. According to a lot of our callers, you may be proven wrong this week.
I really hope. Robinson. Let's get Robinson out there. Give him a chance, for God's sake.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right, Charlie. Have a good one, man.
I like how your relationship with Charlie has completely turned around.
You gotta make light of this stuff. Well, listen, he follows the former Giants. He knows where they went. Now, I haven't heard anything about what Michael Boley's doing with Cincy, because the last time I checked, he had the hooded sweatshirt on. So you can't do much when you're on the sideline. But I do respect Charlie is following former Giants around the country. And I was looking over the Cardinals box score the other day, and I said, oh, Jake Ballard got another reception under his belt.
How many catches has he had?
He has had two catches on the season, one in each game. Remember, they have Rob Housler, which Charlie didn't throw in there. See, I was waiting for a Rob Housler reference. It's hard for Ballard to break in because he's playing behind this tight end that John probably never heard of, because he hasn't had to do the Cardinal scouting report or picked him up on fantasy yet. But we'll
I have Julius Thomas in one league and Marty B in another. I have no need for Rob Housler.
He's putting up some decent numbers. Keep those tabs on that.
He's been a pretty good player. Of course, when you're sitting atop the league standings like I am, you have the tendency not to worry about some of the people in the bottom of others' rosters.
Hello? Too bad I may not have another shot at you. I'm hoping I squeeze in just so that I can have something to talk about.
I'm probably going to have a bye week, so I'll relax the first week. I'll see you struggle in the wild card rounds. Yeah,
a lot can happen over the next 2 weeks. So, you know, before you get over.
Is it only 2 weeks of the playoffs?
Well, week 12 and week 13. Week 14 starts.
Yeah, you're right. Wow. It's amazing how fast the season goes, isn't it?
It has flown by. Absolutely. So we've got some nuggets maybe to get to. Do you want to tease the audience and throw out anything, or we want to save it for later in the week?
I've kind of been sprinkling in some of the nuggets over the course of the show, to be quite honest with you.
You haven't made it too obvious. You've just been, you know, throwing them in here and there.
Cowboys 31st in the NFL in terms of rushing attempts per game. Third highest second half scoring team in the NFL with 150 points. I mentioned they're 20 of 30 in the red zone. Four of their five losses have come by a total of 14 points, including 2 1-point losses, one to the Lions and one to the Chiefs. So other than that Saints game, which obviously was a complete debacle, the Cowboys have actually played a lot of teams close this year. Their offense is still very dangerous, but their defense with all these injuries is struggling an awful lot, as we've detailed over the course of the show. Tony Romo playing some of his best football of his career, very efficient, just 6 interceptions, one of the fewest in the NFL based on the number of attempts. What else do we got here? We talked about Cole Beasley. Dez Bryant, Jason Witten account for 40% of their targets. Miles Austin did practice Monday. He's expected to be back. Cowboys, once again, struggling on third down, 0 of 9 on third downs against the Saints last week. Dez Bryant, no targets in that game until the third quarter. Saints had nearly as many first downs with 40 as the Cowboys had plays run.
Well, they dominated time of possession, the Saints, in that contest.
They dominated every aspect of that game. Let's be honest. Romo getting the ball out quick. That's the protected offensive line that's playing better, but their two guards still have some issues. Ron O'Leary and Mackenzie Bernadotte, with Andre Waters being out for the year with that triceps injury.
Andre Waters, unfortunately, is no longer with
us. I did that earlier in the year, too. What's wrong with you with these names?
I don't know what's in the water at this facility.
Boy.
People, we'll work on it. We'll try to get him back on track.
I got too many NFL players in my head. Excuse me, Brian Waters. And I did do that earlier in the year, too. Oh, boy. At least I didn't say Ricky Waters. That really would have been off the wall.
Well, that would have been a third option.
Yeah,
listen,
I suppose.
We like you to mix it up once in a while. You don't have to just stick to one name.
Kyle Bosworth has actually seen some time as their goal line fullback for the Cowboys, so Giant fans will see him. Terrence Williams has gotten better over the course of the year. They like to go to him down the field, though. He's still a little sloppy in terms of his route running and his receiving skills. Despite the fact Gavin Escobar is a second-round pick, James Hanna, still their primary second tight end. He's gotten better as a blocker. Defensively, no Durant, no Lee. We obviously talked about that. Wilcox expected to be back. Holloman, the expected starter at Sam linebacker. Ware and Claiborne did not practice Monday, but excuse me, as the Cowboys indicated, they do hope or expect both guys to be back on Wednesday. They give up 87 fourth-quarter points, which is the second most in the NFL. So the Giants could maybe have some success late against the Cowboys. 24 defensive line moves since the final preseason game in terms of cuts, signings, and trades.
Counting at home, of course.
It's a lot. I mentioned those Jason Hatcher stats. Let's see. In the secondary, Skandrick's probably been playing better than anybody else. Third most turnovers, takeaways in the NFL. 11 different players with a forced fumble. They pursue really well. We mentioned their backup defensive linemen are really off the street. That's something the Giants can take advantage of when those four starters who have played well are not on the field. Nevins, Wynn, Irvin, Wilbur, these guys are not exactly, you know, names that people know.
Household names.
Ernie Sims will start at Sam. Wilcox is getting better each week, rookie safety. Barry Church, good tackler, plays in the box. Brandon Carr has been up and down this year. Claiborne has struggled when he's played. And they have it. Dwayne Harris, obviously, we haven't really touched on him. Very dangerous return man. Second in the NFL in kickoff returns, fourth in punt returns, and he's their best cover guy. And Dan Bailey, their kicker, has been extremely accurate this year, and he's been good getting touchbacks as well. One of the best kickers in the league. So there you go.
Before we close things out, the pick segment, which has really been narrowed down to four people. It's like dropping like flies, essentially, every single week. We're losing.
Well, I don't even want to talk about my record for this past week.
It was a very mediocre week, though. The two people that do not host this show outperformed both of us by far.
Yeah, Neely and Dan did a good job.
Neely and Dan both 4-2.
The tech guru and our stat master. And that's not really true. Eisen's kind of our stat guy, but the bearded one, Dan Salamone.
Dan puts together the top 10 reasons for the Cowboys-Giants rivalry, right? I'm sure he's working on that, adding up some of the big storylines and seeing what we'll have in the mix this week.
And every month is No Shave November for Dan Salamone.
Yes. Well, unlike other people, he can actually have it groomed out.
Yes.
Others don't have that.
You have some stubble there, Lance. What is that, about 3 weeks worth? No?
Yeah, we're working on about a month and a half. It'll eventually grow in.
Yes.
So, in terms of the picks, you and I went 2-4, so we're still neck and neck.
I should have picked that. You know what? I felt okay about the Panthers, too. I really thought about taking them. That's the one pick
you did.
I
you picked Carolina.
I did pick Carolina. Yeah. Oh, excellent. That was a good move.
That was one of your two victories.
Okay, well,
who
would have thought the Jets
back
would get destroyed? No,
by the way, who would have thought that Miami would have knocked off San Diego? To me, that was a big
stunner. Yeah, I mean, Miami, they lose to Tampa, then they go and they beat you know what? The Chargers are one of those teams. Can you figure the Chargers? I never know what the hell they're going to do. Let's be honest.
Different coach, same routine.
Yeah. You just don't know.
Mike McCoy, North Turner, makes no difference.
I mean, their offense has been pretty good, but their defense has struggled for sure.
So Anita Marks and Paul DiTino did not give in their picks.
Now, here's the interesting thing, and we're going to have to wait to see what happens this week. Now, this could have just been an omission on Paul DiTino. He was very busy last week. He was very psyched for that Cowboy-Packer game. He had to watch those Scott Tolzien cut-ups 12 times, so he was very busy. Throw on top of that the fact we had a college football game down in Pennsylvania, which is like a five-hour drive on Saturday, so it was a lot of driving, a lot of prep for that game. He does play-by-play. So, look, I'm going to give Paul a pass. But if we see a pattern develop this week when Paul doesn't submit his picks again, there might be some solidarity going on in that Wednesday-Thursday program, and that would be unfortunate.
And Jason Forbes, if you're out there listening on Twitter.
Stop
know,
stirring the pot,
I
will
know
you?
He likes to create some havoc between Anita Marks and myself. And I'm not going to back down from it. But
has she confronted you yet?
She has not confronted me. I've avoided her.
Has she seen you, though?
She has not seen me either, so that's an easy way to avoid her. But Paul Dottino now is going to see a side of me that I don't like to show every single day. Because
I see it every day.
Yes,
it's not fun.
Well, you unfortunately have to deal with it. But the bottom line is Dottino has given in his picks each and every week.
Very early and promptly, too.
So for you to throw out that he was involved in 17 different things in 1 week, listen, we all
Scott Tolzien was a very, very big-time consuming activity for him last week.
He doesn't have to do so much then for Tony Romo, okay? He's seen his fair share of Tony Romo. So the bottom line is this is a big statement week, Giants fans, for Paul Dottino. The white pants are off, okay? And now he has an opportunity to redeem himself.
So how are you going to handle his record? Are you going to leave it as is? I think we should leave it at is for a week. Now, this means you have to start calculating winning percentages, which is unfortunate.
Well, but think about it. If we went by the average, he would get a 3-3 record.
Oh, was that the average?
Just about. And that's what I was going to give him, because that's all strike right. One. Strike two is give 2-4. I
understand the rules.
It's 1-5, excuse me. And then if you're Anita Marks, you're in the 0-6 routine.
And you realize we're never going to see picks of her again.
No,
right?
We're never going to.
So are you going to just strike her off the board, or are you just going to keep giving her sick losses for
Anita
fun?
Anita Marks is at the point where we are going to completely wipe her out. Okay. Now, Dottino has strike one again.
Now, here's the question.
We skip over strike two and strike three.
Will she even be on the email when you send out the picks
this
week?
No, we will no longer be emailing her the picks. And Jason Forbes, if you want to pass that info along to her since I don't see her anymore, feel free to do that. But we've got to put our foot down. Enough is enough.
Dan, I've never been happier with a decision than when I decided to pass on the responsibility of these picks to Lance Meadow.
Thanks a lot.
It was the
that.
Best decision I've ever made as a producer.
All of the hard work with the charts and the tables and the tallying of the numbers.
I know. Do you want to look at the games this week? See what games you want to do real quick before we say goodbye? What time is it anyway?
It is 7 after 11.
Oh, we got to get out of here. Let's look at the games. Come on. I got work
right,
to
let's
do.
Let's take a look at the schedule.
I have Cowboys scouting reports to
and
write up here.
You've got other producers to throw responsibilities to.
I'm a one-man machine, and you know
absolutely. All right. We've got a decent Thursday night matchup, though. Atlanta has
Atlanta stinks.
Too well.
There's nothing decent about
them.
Well,
we've got to do the divisional games, though. Right. Philadelphia's on bye, so we're going to take Washington's game.
Monday night. Home versus San Francisco.
Correct.
That's an interesting one.
That'll be in the mix. Dallas Giants, we're not going to do.
Well, you know what?
This game.
I'm not rooting for any injuries or predicting any, but San Francisco's a very physical defense. And remember, the Giants do have RG3 next week. I could see the Redskins banging RG3 up a little bit this week, to be quite honest with you. Just saying.
They banged up Drew Brees, but he was able to overcome that.
Did you think that was a penalty?
No, I did not think that was a penalty.
He got him on the shoulder pads, right?
He did, but here's my defense of the officials. You see that at full speed, that's a penalty.
It looks like a clothesline.
Correct. So that's why I understand why it was called. You have the benefit of replay like we view 100 times, then you clearly see it.
Now, here's the question. Has he been fined yet?
Well, normally they announce
those letters come out. They come out later in the week. I'll be curious to see if he gets a fine for that, and I'm guessing he won't. That's what I'm guessing. And did you think it was pass interference last night?
Well, based on the rules and regulations, it wasn't pass interference if it wasn't a catchable football.
However, I think it could have been a catchable football.
Well, forget defensive pass interference. It was defensive holding. Call defensive
holding. Well, no, but remember, it's only holding if it's happening before the pass is released. Was he being held before the pass
was
released?
There was a lot of contact.
To me, that has to be called. Round. Usually for a ball to be considered uncatchable, it has to be out of bounds, over his head, a good 10 yards away. And Kuechly basically ran the guy out of bounds with the ball going into the end zone. That, to me, has to be interference.
Well, you make the argument he doesn't hold him. It's a catchable football.
Well, exactly.
That
right.
Jimmy Graham can get to.
And if you're if you're not sure it's a catchable football, you have to assume that it is. You can't take a guess. Well, that's not how this works.
This is what's mind-boggling. They threw the flag, and the official who threw it was the closest one to the vicinity of the play. How do two officials on the far sidelines overturn an official right behind the play?
And there was no explanation either. That's the worst part.
Oh, that was a bad job.
If it's uncatchable, say it's uncatchable. Because there's no way you could say that wasn't pass interference. He face-guarded him and rode him out of bounds. It was an obvious penalty. If it's uncatchable, announce it's uncatchable, so at least we know that's what your ruling was. Because what else could it have been?
I was very surprised with how that game ended. And this is not to take anything away from Carolina. Carolina played a very good game.
And by the way, great for Dave Gettleman, who took over down there as general manager. And a lot of people thought this would have been a down year. He'd have to clean house, fire the coach, and start over. Ron Rivera's improved a lot as a head coach in his second year. He's done a much better job. Cam Newton has become a much better quarterback in terms of the craft of the position. He's done an excellent job. The defense has completely turned around. And two ex-Giants, then there, Chase Blackburn and Dominic Hinton, two great guys. Happy for both of them.
And they also have three reliable running backs now that Jonathan Stewart is back. Wow. And I was down on this receiving core for the most part, but you've got to give these guys credit. They've made some plays. The Ted Ginns of the world, the Greg Olsons of the world, even Brandon LaFell has flashed here or there.
How about the fact that D'Angelo Williams hasn't gotten hurt yet? That's an upset in itself. Jonathan Stewart's been out like the whole year,
well,
but at least D'Angelo Williams has been healthy. And Tolbert's been great around the goal line.
And that's why they brought him in 2 seasons ago to serve as a fullback and also a running back.
Back to the case at hand. Sorry.
I say we go Denver, New England, clearly Sunday night.
Got to do that.
San Fran, Washington contest.
By the way, did you see the promos on Sunday night for Denver, New England? Did you see, like, the fancy
photos?
Graphic that they had? Tom Brady looked downright evil. He looked like a supervillain.
Yeah.
It was like a movie poster for, like, the next Superman movie.
Well, he is pretty pissed off based on what happened in football, so it is rather fitting, to be honest with you.
I mean, he looked like really, like, you know, Tom Brady's, you know, usually, like, you know, Mr., you know, pretty boy model hair, and he looked like downright, like, supervillain evil in that photo.
They took the more serious approach.
I know. Peyton didn't look that way, though. He looked like the old, you know, the American farm boy.
I mean, we're really breaking down the
I thought it was interesting.
You don't have other things to get occupied with.
Sorry.
Don't you have a lot of Giants work to get to?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, the other games that we need to get to. San Diego-Kansas City is not a bad matchup to pick.
In Kansas City, I mean, I think...
Hey, pick Kansas City.
That spread's got to be 7 points, right?
All right, so then clearly it can't be your upset special. My apologies. We're going to make you have
there
to
There
aren't
a lot of great games this week.
I think by default...
Jets at Baltimore? That's an AFC wild card game.
We could go that.
I'm not picking Tennessee, Oakland, Indy.
Well, those are the four games right there. You need to determine.
Which is the fourth one?
Well, San Francisco, Washington, mm-hmm. Denver, New England, San Diego, Kansas City, and Jets, Baltimore.
You would rather do San Diego, Kansas City than Indy, Arizona? Arizona's 6-4. Indianapolis has struggled a little bit. I like Indy, Arizona Kansas City, San
Indy,
Diego.
Indy, Arizona, and then Jets, Baltimore could be a wild card or one of the upset specials. That's fine.
I want to take out Chargers, and
so you want to
Chiefs.
Replace that with Jets, Ravens?
Yeah, that's correct.
This is the
I want
Sam
Chargers,
Smith
Chiefs out.
I'm hate, all over
you should
times.
Be thrilled. I'm giving you an opportunity to use the Chargers as your upset special.
I think Kansas City's going to win that game.
Well,
so it's not going to help.
No, so we're not doing that. No, that game's out. It's too easy.
Jets, Baltimore.
Okay, fine.
I can't wait to see the spreads, by the way, so we can counter your philosophy on this. I don't think the spread's going to be as big as you're thinking. With Kansas City, San Diego.
San Diego at Kansas City, that'll be a minimum
Kansas
5.5-point spread.
Kansas City coming off a loss.
Minimum.
I think it's going to be a little bit closer.
No way.
All right.
Look it up.
Time will tell. It's not going to be a pick'em game, but
no.
It's going to be comfortable.
But I think Jets-Baltimore will be very close. I think Indy-Arizona will be a 3.5-point spread, maybe. Maybe Colts by 3.5 in that game.
There's some storylines there, too. Bruce Arians going against his former team.
Todd Haley as well. Oh, Todd Haley's
with Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, sorry.
We'll add
never
that
mind.
To the
yeah.
list. All right, Brian Waters.
No, that one I knew. That one I knew as soon as I said it.
Jackson. We got a number of them.
Correct.
Okay, so now we're set with the games. We'll send out the emails now that the Giants audience, we bored them with the science behind how we pick games each and every week.
I think that's enjoyable.
So you have Paul Dottino and Anita Marks the next 2 days, Wednesdays and Thursdays. Give them as much hell as humanly possible about their picks for not putting in their picks, I should say.
No word from Anna DC today, by the way.
That's right. Well, we're hopefully saving her for Friday.
Next time she calls, I'm going to ask her about this whole, you know, calling up DC radio stations as a Redskin fan
We
thing.
Need to do some investigative reporting. And by the way, maybe it's unfair to even call her Ann from DC because she uses so many different aliases.
What was the alias she apparently used? Mary? Something like that? I'll have to look it up. Tariq Wilson had it on Twitter. I'll have to check it out.
Everybody, I'm sure, has been keeping a tally. With that being said, we'll hope that Ann can provide some comic relief on Friday. You can continue to chime in the conversation, hashtag Giants Chat. Paul and Anita with you the next 2 days. John and I back on Friday. Enjoy the rest of your day and stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest news regarding the team. Have a good one.